Du hörst den Potenzialforscher-Podcast, Episode Nummer 103. Selbstmitgefühl stärkt unsere Gesundheit, reduziert Stress und Ängste und verbessert unsere Beziehungen. Was achtsames Selbstmitgefühl genau ist und warum es auch bei Burnout und dem intensiven Gefühl von Scham hilfreich ist, darüber spreche ich in dieser Folge mit Regula Sahner und Chris Germer. Herzlich willkommen beim Potenzialforscher-Podcast, ein Raum, um gemeinsam unser Menschsein zu erforschen. Von und mit Christina Jacka. Hallo liebe Potenzialforschende. Es ist eine große Freude für mich, heute zwei ganz besondere Gäste zu begrüßen. In dieser Folge spreche ich mit den Psychotherapeuten Chris Germer und Regula Sahner. Chris ist gemeinsam mit der Forscherin Christine Neff, der Mitentwickler des Programms Mindful Self-Compassion, also achtsames Selbstmitgefühl. Er ist Autor mehrerer Bücher, Dozent an der Harvard Medical School und unterrichtet weltweit das Selbstmitgefühl-Programm sowie Achtsamkeit. Regula Sahner ist Psychotherapeutin und zertifizierte MBSR und MSC-Lehrerin, also Mindful Self-Compassion-Lehrerin. Sie gründete das Zentrum für Achtsamkeit in Basel, Schweiz, wo auch Kurse und Fachausbildungen zu Selbstmitgefühl angeboten werden. Im Juni durfte ich bei beiden eine spannende Weiterbildung zum Thema Scham und Selbstmitgefühl besuchen. Ein wichtiges Thema, in das wir in diesem sehr persönlichen Gespräch eintauchen. Wir haben das Interview in Englisch geführt, das Podcastgespräch findest du aber auch auf meinem YouTube-Kanal mit deutschen Untertiteln. Nun wünsche ich dir viel Spaß beim Lauschen. A warm welcome to Chris Germer and Regula Sahner. It is a great pleasure and honor to have you both here on air. I did a little introduction in the intro, but I think it would be very helpful if you give us a short personal introduction of yourself. So Chris, would you like to start?
Yeah, sure. First of all, thanks for having us on your podcast. And I'm a clinical psychologist working in the Boston area in the United States. And I'm also a co-developer of the Mindful Self-Compassion Program, which is being taught all over the world. And mostly I spend my time writing and giving talks, but I'm also still a psychotherapist.
Yeah. Hello, and thank you also from my side for the invitation. I'm also a psychotherapist working and living in Basel, Switzerland. And here I founded the Center of Mindfulness here in Basel, Zentrum für Achtsamkeit. And there I'm working as a psychotherapist, but also as a mindfulness teacher. And there are other friends who are teaching their mindfulness and self-compassion. And we are teaching, you know, for private persons, but also for communities, mental health, the mental health groups. And yeah, that's what we are doing there in Basel.
Great. Thank you very much. Chris, you said that you are the co-developer of the Mindful Self-Compassion Program with Christine Neff. Would you please explain what, for our listeners, what Mindful Self-Compassion is and especially how we benefit or would benefit from it all?
That's a big question. You could spend the whole hour on that one. Yeah. So Mindful Self-Compassion is the name of an 8-week training that was based on the mindfulness-based stress reduction program. And we call it Mindful Self-Compassion because it's anchored in mindfulness. Mm-hmm. But what it does is helps people to learn and cultivate self-compassion in their lives. And so self-compassion is really quite simple. Self-compassion is giving ourselves the same kindness and understanding as we would give to a dear friend who's struggling or suffering in some way. And Kristen also came up with a definition that is used in her scale and is also the main definition used in most of the research on self-compassion. And that is that self-compassion has three components, all of which are important. The first one is mindfulness. We need to know that we're struggling when we're struggling. The second is common humanity. We need to not feel so alone. It's really hard to be kind to ourselves when we feel all alone. It kind of magnifies our suffering. So the sense of common humanity is important. And then also self-kindness. In other words, as I said before, treating ourselves well with care and with understanding and a sense of connection. So all those three components are involved in self-compassion, and they're also taught in the 8-week mindful self-compassion program. Oh, you were also wondering what's the benefit you were asking, Christina? Yeah. So the benefits are enormous. When Kristin Neff started to research self-compassion in 2003, in other words, 21 years ago, there was only one article on self-compassion in the academic literature that was hers. And now there are well over 7,000 articles, and you would be hard-pressed to find one that is negative. What we've discovered over these, 2 decades is that self-compassion is really good for us. It's good for mental health and well-being. It actually improves physical health. It reduces stress, anxiety, and depression. It increases motivation to succeed. And it also improves our relationships. Often people think, oh, self-compassion, I'll become more selfish, or I'll become lazy, or I'll become self-absorbed, or I'll become demotivated. Actually, what we've learned is exactly the opposite, that self-compassion is a inner resource, and it's actually a skill. It's something that you can practice that can improve many different areas of our lives. So what that means is if we only have a limited amount of time to do something, some kind of inner development, it's a cost-effective activity to learn self-compassion because it probably will improve a lot of different areas of our lives.
Sounds great. Regula, all these benefits, such a great thing to be self-compassionate, but still, it's very difficult for us to give us self-compassion. Why is that so? Why is it so difficult to do that?
There is a sentence, yeah, love reveals everything unlike it. And that's, the reason. And sometimes, it hurts when we are more compassionate with ourselves or we connect with feelings which are not so great and beautiful and whatever. So we have to be open to sense a little bit of our suffering. So then you can answer with self-compassion. And then the benefits, they are coming.
But is it, let's say, normal, or usual that it takes a little bit of a process, a little bit of time?
Not in my experience. Sometimes people feel it right away, but it's that it's changing something inside and that they can look different to the problem and they can solve it. In my view, it's really that we have to learn self-compassion with these three components, and really well with teachers who are trained in this. As you said, as a coach, you see this that people have some resistance against compassion for themselves. There is also, that sentence, what I said, the suffering, but also there is some fear sometimes to get, more selfish or whatever. And these are all misgivings. And so you have to have somebody, you know, who tells you, oh, that's just normal. That's like a common humanity. That's like everybody, you know, sends it. Or there are other people who are, yeah, who have the same problem or the same resistance. And then, you know, their trust is coming and then you can get over it.
Well, that's the shared experience.
Right. And mostly, you know, we teach self-compassion in groups when we teach it as a course or as really this program. And as a psychotherapist, you know, there or a coach, you have more flexibility to bring it, to see what is the resistance, what is the fear. And then it's now to navigating to this place of being more compassionate to themselves for the patients.
Chris, there is a big difference between self-compassion and self-care, right?
Oh, I don't know if there's a big difference, but there is a difference. The main difference is in order to feel compassion, there has to be suffering. And so we can care for ourselves when we're not suffering, but when we care for ourselves while we're suffering, then that has the possibility of being self-compassion, right? The problem is that when we suffer, we tend not to take care of ourselves. In other words, we tend to try to distract ourselves, often in behaviors that cause problems, like drinking too much or working too much, or we just, you know, shut down. Sometimes we get angry at ourselves or others, and none of this is compassion. So compassion, if you want to think of like, what is compassion, when love meets suffering and stays loving, that's compassion. And then if we apply that to ourselves, when we are feeling caring toward ourselves, but then we meet suffering, what does it take to stay loving, stay kind, stay compassionate? And that often requires a little practice.
In June, both of you were leading, for me, an extraordinary seminar about mindful self-compassion and shame in Basel. And to be honest, I'm still deeply touched of these 2 days and the experiences you offered in the room. Shame seems to be a very difficult thing for us human beings. Why is that such a challenging emotion for us, Regula?
From my experience, you know, this is maybe Chris can tell you, you know, more about that on another perspective. But my experience is that shame is often, you know, hidden. It's not, you know, you don't think you're ashamed, but you think or you feel that there is stress. When you give yourself in a difficult situation self-compassion, it warms up these feelings. And so shame appears. And when you can name it, when you know how shame feels, or when I, you know, could really feel that this is shame, and say and then still staying caring, what Chris said before, when I could stay caring, so it was really a huge difference, because I really experienced that there is really love which comes up, and I can face many other things, you know, what I sometimes missed. When you can really feel and face shame and bring this, yeah, this wonderful feeling of compassion, I become often another perspective.
First of all, thank you, Regula, for talking about some very deep stuff in English. I know from personal experience speaking German that when I try to talk about deep things, I need to start speaking in my native tongues. But I thought you answered it quite beautifully. I can just maybe frame it a little more. In other words, why is it so hard to see, to work with shame? One is it's a very painful emotion. It's probably the most painful emotion. Regula was saying that it's hidden. It's definitely hidden. It's also socially taboo. In other words, it's not generally encouraged, at a dinner party to start talking about shame, because people start to feel shame when we just name shame. The definition of shame is that shame is a self-attack. It's an attack on the self. So when our self is attacked, what often happens is that we check out, we disappear. In other words, as I was suggesting before, we might throw ourselves into entertainment or into substances or into working too much. In other words, we do all kinds. Sometimes when we're attacking ourselves and feeling ashamed, we'll attack other people and create big drama. But all of this means we actually don't have to be in our bodies with shame. And if nobody is home, we cannot work with it. So in my view, this is also what makes shame really difficult. Ultimately, though, I think what Regula said, it says it all, which is that shame is just so painful. And when we give ourselves kindness for shame, we feel it even more vividly at first. But then after a while, shame loses its grip because we are getting that thing that we have needed all along, which is love and kindness and care and connection. That's what people get with self-compassion.
So Chris, how do we know then that we're experiencing shame?
It's interesting, shame is a universal emotion, but each person has their own, what you might say, fingerprint of shame. In other words, each person has their own expression of shame. Shame shows up individually in each person in a slightly different way. But there are general categories of expressions of shame. So for example, we could have an inner body sensation. We could have a sinking feeling, or we could feel afraid, or we could get agitated or fidgety inside, or we could go numb. So that's inner body. And there are outer body expressions. So for example, we can hide our eyes. We could slump our shoulders. We could blush, things like that. And then there are mental expressions of shame. The idea that I'm unworthy, I'm unlovable. We could get confused. We could feel alone. And then there are also behavioral expressions. We could, as I said before, kind of disappear, go small, go silent, go away. Or we can attack, as I also mentioned. Or we can become people-pleasing. We can kind of, as we say in English, try to suck up to the person who shamed us because we can't bear the idea of feeling shame. So we try to get their approval back, even if it's a really bad idea. So all of these are different expressions, and people express shame in their own ways. But the most important thing is to know when we're feeling shame. So whatever an individual expression for a person is, it's like a red flag. And when the red flag is waving, we have the opportunity to be mindful. We have the opportunity to say, ah, shame. I'm feeling shame. Shame is in the house. And maybe even get curious about it. And that's the first step to self-compassion.
And why is self-compassion helpful for shame?
Because it's the opposite of shame. In other words, conceptually, like in Kristen Neff's definition, the opposite of self-kindness is self-criticism. Mm-hmm. And self-criticism is the language of shame. It's the voice of shame. The opposite of common humanity is isolation. Everybody feels isolated when they feel shame, uniquely alone in the world. And the opposite of mindfulness is rumination, or getting stuck in our heads. And what makes shame such a difficult emotion is because we get all wrapped up in ourselves. So theoretically, the opposite of self-compassion are key characteristics of shame. But the research also shows clearly over and over and over again, as self-compassion goes up, shame goes down. And it's simply because when we are feeling ashamed, we are blaming and judging and attacking ourselves. And when we are self-compassionate, we are encouraging ourselves, supporting ourselves, and expressing kindness to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it is exactly the opposite. And the interesting thing, Christina, is that if we're suffering from shame and we give ourselves self-compassion, it will actually diminish the shame before we know that we're suffering from shame. But the amazing thing is when we do know that we're suffering from shame and we intentionally give ourselves compassion, then it's even more powerful.
Regula, since the seminar, a very special question or thought goes through my mind again and again. It's about, could mindful self-compassion towards these shame parts or the shame part in us be maybe a pathway to more peace in the world?
Of course, that's true. And it's really needed, I guess, you know, and all everything what we are doing, you know, when we can face our feelings, that's the moment, you know, when we are able to change it or able to stay with the feeling and, you know, hold ourselves. And we are not so much, as in mindfulness, what we always learn, that we are not really reaction, that we don't reaction, but that we can stay with the feeling, and then we have all our capacities and we can take care on the answer and answering stress and not react on stress or stressful feelings.
Would you like to add something, Chris? Or
yeah, I do think that a lot of the violence in the world and a lot of the hatred in the world comes from shame. We see this in political violence. Often the people who do this feel very ashamed and they are striking out, you know. So if, as Regula said, we could actually know what we're feeling and respond to it directly, then we won't necessarily do behaviors which are going to cause more harm and more suffering in the world. So shame is often behind domestic violence. Shame is often behind self-injury. Shame is often behind political violence. Right now in the United States, you know, a lot of the motivation that is causing so much upheaval is from people who have felt marginalized and disregarded and shamed through most of their lives. And now there's a great sense of empowerment, but it's not necessarily wise empowerment. It's just empowerment with an enjoyment of being re-empowered. So This is an example of how, if we could look deeper, we could actually come up with solutions rather than just trying to burn down the house.
The first time we three met was in 2019 in Basel, and you're leading the seminar called The Yin and Yang of Mindful Self-Compassion. Chris, if you look back to the last 5 years, how did the field of self-compassion evolve?
So around that time, Kristen and I, and particularly Kristen, were realizing that compassion is not only tender, but also has an action-oriented aspect, a fierce aspect, and that to be compassionate and self-compassionate, we sometimes need to say no to harm. We need to stand up. We need to be strong. And that's what we were doing 5 years ago at that conference that you attended, Christina, and that Regula was co-teaching and organized. Since then, we did have the pandemic. And in the research around the world, there was a ton of research being done on self-compassion to manage the stress of the pandemic. And it's very clear that people who learn self-compassion actually manage the stress better. During this time, also, lots and lots of people were basically on a forced retreat in their homes. And they were looking for inner resources to cope with the stress of the pandemic and not working and having children at home rather than at school. And it was a big upheaval. And so lots and lots of people started taking self-compassion training online. So this was, you could say, the heyday of self-compassion training, because everybody was kind of on a forced retreat, trying to figure out how do I work with my mind. So that's what happened then. But I can say for Kristen and myself during that time, we were also feeling a little burned out. We were burned out because self-compassion was flourishing and we were working really hard. And so at some point, we just ran out of steam. And then Kristen had the bright idea. Actually, Chris, why don't we bring self-compassion to our own experience of burnout and then also chronicle it or write a book, or if it works, on how self-compassion works for our own burnout. And so we actually wrote a book along with a colleague, Christine Benton, which will be released in English in September of this year, called Self-Compassion for Burnout. But I can just tell you personally that during this time, I had a contract to write a book on self-compassion for shame. And because I felt burned out, I actually canceled the contract. And in the last month, I have so much fresh energy that I re-signed the contract. And there will be the shame book coming in September of 2025. So we could say that the last 5 years for Kristen and I were quite ultimately productive, but the ground for the productivity was the struggles associated with the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic. I think that's something everyone can relate to.
Wow, but it's great news that you re-signed the contract for the book, Self-Compassion and Shame. I think we are looking forward to read that one.
Thank you.
Let's stay for a minute with the book, Mindful Self-Compassion for Burnout, which will be released, as you said, in September this year. You already talked about why you started to write about that topic, but maybe you can explain for our listeners why self-compassion is linked to burnout.
So I think self-compassion, it's an antidote to shame, but it's also an antidote to burnout. So the first question is, what is burnout? And so burnout is a long-term stress reaction when our perceived work demands exceed our ability to meet them. Mm-hmm. And technically speaking, burnout refers to emotional exhaustion, like feeling drained and fatigued, to what we call depersonalization or withdrawal and cynicism and negativity about our work, and also to reduced sense of accomplishment. We feel inept, ineffective, incompetent, and so forth. So this is generally what we understand as burnout. And it's not only in occupational work, like professional work. Anytime we're caring for anybody, even work at home can burn us out. So that's what burnout is. And there are many different causes for burnout. There are external causes and internal causes. So external causes are like excessive workload, lack of control, limited rewards, unfairness, lack of support. But there are inner causes as well. And inner causes are like caring too much for others to the extent we don't care for ourselves, you know, loving our work too much, having work as a source of self-esteem, perfectionism, not never being good enough, so you have to keep working, things like this. So how does self-compassion respond to all this? So if we think about the three components of self-compassion, if we think about mindfulness, common humanity, and self-kindness, burnout gets worse. Number one, when we suppress our pain and just try to have a stiff upper lip and push through. Burnout gets worse when we feel alone in our troubles, and burnout gets worse when we blame ourselves for being burned out. Self-compassion is the opposite. With mindfulness, we actually know when we're suffering. We can validate our suffering rather than disregard it. With the common humanity aspect, self-compassion actually tells us that the experience of burnout is natural and normal, and we're not alone. Right now, Christina, in the United States, most studies of burnout show that 50 to 70% of Americans describe themselves as burned out. It's very common. No need to feel all alone when we have it. So self-compassion helps us to experience common humanity. And lastly, self-kindness. Self-compassion gives us a sense of care and safety that we need in order to feel the pain of burnout. It tells us that we deserve better. It tells us that we are worthy of kindness. We don't have to work all the time in order to be a good person. And also, fierce self-compassion sets a boundary on unfair occupational demands. So when I was describing the causes of burnout, the external causes and internal causes, work with the external causes, we need fierce self-compassion. To work with the internal causes, we often need tender self-compassion.
For me, you know, it needs a lot of courage to face really there is an inner cause. And, you know, when you face this, that there is sometimes, you know, I'm tired of whatever it is, of caring. And then it comes often to this ground that I'm tired of caring for myself also. Mm-hmm. And mostly we have nobody who is there who cares for ourselves, or we don't let somebody in to care for ourselves. This is also a reason. So when you know that there is, you can be compassionate to yourself also in this moment, and there is common humanity, you're not alone. That helps a lot because you accept there is a feeling of exhaustion since a long time. And not only because, you know, now I have a stressful time or whatever it is, or difficult time at work or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just like to echo what Regula said. She said it so beautifully that when we're burned out and exhausted, we also are exhausted caring for ourselves. Because when we think, oh, I'm burned out, now I should, like, what do you tell me to do? I need to, like, add one more thing. I need to add self-compassion to my life. I need to, like, go to a self-compassion course. I don't even have time to sleep or eat. You know, it's like extra. And what Regula is basically saying is, no, it's not extra. It's actually, it's doing things differently and maybe even less, but for an entirely different reason. Mm-hmm. And that's the magic of self-compassion for burnout. We're not adding to our workload. It actually is subtracting from our workload, where our lives actually become easier every moment of self-compassion that we have. Mm-hmm. It's a change in attitude, not adding more behaviors that are just going to wear us out more.
For me, you know, this is really basic for me. When I teach self-compassion or mindful self-compassion, it's really that we don't care about the problem. We care about ourselves first. You know, this is very important. We can, you know, have another behavior, or we can change first the relationship or whatever. But we care first for ourselves and then can solve the problem differently after caring for ourselves.
Yeah. If I can just say one addition to that, there's this wonderful quote, you know, we're all therapists on this call. And Carl Rogers said, the curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, which is what Regula is talking about, then change happens almost by itself. So when Regula was saying, actually, we're not going to like worry about what we think is the problem. We're going to care for ourselves first and then see what happens. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, the problem that we were struggling with starts to solve itself as if by itself when we put the whole change agenda on a new footing.
Thank you very much. Before we come to an end, you are welcome, both of you, to share some closing words, something you would like to mention additionally or something that is important to you.
I could close with what we call the core paradox of self-compassion practice. Mm-hmm. And this is an idea which we've alluded to throughout this interview, but I think it's worth saying directly, because what I'm about to say makes all the difference about whether self-compassion will work for you or not. And that is the statement that when we suffer, we practice self-compassion not to feel better, but simply because we feel bad. So this is kind of crazy, because the only reason we do anything in life is because we want to feel better. You know, we expect it will bring us happiness and reduce suffering. But what would it be like to just sort of suspend that agenda, like Regula was saying before, and just be kind to ourselves because we are suffering? The same way you might be kind to a child with a flu who is going to have the flu for 5 days, but you care for the child, you know? Well, when it comes to psychological things, emotional things, actually caring for ourselves is the cure. So we really need, as Regula said, is to front load kindness, especially when we're suffering.
That's very important. That's also the ground of mindfulness, which is in here also. And, you know, to all the listeners here, it's joyful to practice mindful self-compassion. This is really one thing. The other thing is it's very courageous, and we need courage, you know, to be self-reflected. And I have the impression, you know, the need, when we really feel that there is something, you know, I want to know what's there. This is also curiosity, and this is wonderful. And then it leads to self-reflection, and that's wonderful. And for me, self-compassion comes in immediately, you know, and also when many listeners are also mindfulness practitioners, and especially for them, you know, when you face something, when you see that there is maybe, you know, anxiety, or there is tiredness, or I'm really sad, then you bring self-compassion in immediately. That's just a normal and maybe not normal, normal is a bad word or not the right word. It's intrinsic answer to suffering immediately when you open up. Being courageous, try to connect other people who are working or using self-compassion like you, Christina.
And you also said joyful, Regula. That's really important to know. Compassion is a positive emotion. It makes us happy. It gives us energy. It's fundamentally joyful. It's fundamentally not about suffering. It's fundamentally about love. Mm-hmm. It's joyful. That's a really important insight that people should know before they do this. It's going to make you happy, but in a paradoxical way.
And you know what comes back to my mind is that you asked so wonderful, Christina, before, what is the difference between self-care and self-compassion? And that's what you, you know, your answer was for me. So, because you meet suffering, and you have the courage to meet suffering. And that's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. Because you have this tool of mindful self-compassion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your appreciated time and expertise. I will put all the information about your websites and programs and seminars in the show notes so that the listeners know how to contact you and get to know your highly recommended offers. It was really a great pleasure and honor talking to you. Thank you very, very much being here and spreading self-compassion and as well compassion in the world. That is a great gift. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christina.
Thank you, Christina. And you're doing this too. You know, you're also spreading self-compassion and compassion into the world. Thank you so much.
Ich hoffe, du konntest heute von dieser Folge einiges mitnehmen. Falls ja, magst du vielleicht den Podcast weiterempfehlen oder den Monatsletter abonnieren. Ich würde mich sehr freuen. Bis zur nächsten Folge und alles Liebe, deine Christina. Und denk daran, wenn wir unser Potenzial in die Welt tragen, dann ist es Magie. Etwas in uns leuchtet besonders hell.